But the reality is that as the practice matures and you grow in that capacity, you're then able to recoup the value of your investment. Oh, and here's the important thing, not off your back or your sweat, or for lack of a better term, your ability to actively produce that dentistry. That becomes the scenario where you're putting on, you are working on the practice rather than in the practice hat.
You're listening to the Dental Sherpas Podcast, where we make it easier to transform your practice, get out of the chair, and into the life you want.
Well, welcome back to another exciting, we hope exciting episode of the Dental Sherpas. And I think we got a good topic today. It is, let's see, December 18th, 2020. And man, it's getting cold in Tennessee. And it is sure feeling a lot like Christmas. My HQ, so to speak, is right here on an old southern square in a southern town right outside of Nashville, Tennessee. And they have added a new feature to our courthouse. Our courthouse was built pre-Civil War, and they've added this feature, and it is a speaker system. And so they are pumping Christmas music, and it's like loud. So we're definitely in the Christmas cheer around here and the holiday cheer around here. What about you guys out there, Seth?
Well, I can't say it's cold here, so I can't empathize you there. No, we're very fortunate. It's 84 degrees. Sorry for all you folks out there in Winterland. It's just beautiful Christmas weather. This is the favorite time of year for me because in Hawaii, we're used to pretty sweltering heat and humidity. This time of year, it's always nice. You know, the trade winds are in, the breezes are nice. We've got, even though it's warm, it's probably one of the most pleasant times of the year to be around. So can't wait for the tourists to come back and experience that. Boy, I know that's we're really yearning for that for our economy. But no, it's a wonderful time of year for me too, man. I the decorations are up, even though it's palm trees rather than pine trees. It's still nice to see the lights up. It's nice to see people out and about trying to, you know, spread Christmas cheer. So it's a good place to be.
Yeah. Kind of feels like it is such a real relational time of year. And I really enjoy that. Hey, as soon as kind of tourism opens up out there, it sounds like we need to plan like a Dental Sherpas in-person retreat and come see you guys. We'll help stimulate the economy and get some tax write-offs and get to spend some time together. So we need to plan a retreat here. Go with that. So.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Well, today I thought we would talk about attention that dental entrepreneurs or dental practice owners who are in the midst of climbing this mountain towards getting out of the chair, to use our Dental Sherpas imagery, there's this tension that occurs. And it's the tension between growth in the practice and profit in the practice. And so I know you've dealt with that tension. I have dentists, you have dentists all the time talking to you about this. So I thought we'd take a few minutes here today and talk about that tension and talk about how you manage it, some things that I've seen as well. So how's that sound for our topic today?
That sounds great because that is a hot topic for those trying to grow.
It really is. It really is. And it really starts with, you know, the framework that you look at it through, right? Mm-hmm. And that has to shift. So talk about how that framework has to shift and how you have kind of seen and dealt with the tension between growth and profit.
Right. Well, I think the most common thing is that the guys who are starting to go in that direction, they kind of come from the mindset where they were the main drivers of productivity. It was pretty evident in their minds, the harder they worked, the more they produced, they would see this nice little number. And obviously, it got to a point where they saw themselves having these really big profit numbers, you know, large from anyone's perspective. And suddenly you're going from that situation where you're just driving it. So you've always got lower expenses. You've got less people to worry about. You've got, you know, for lack of a better term, less moving parts going on. So the obviously your means of getting your profit very, very large by simply just taking what's left over is very easy. Well, as you grow larger, that becomes much more complex, right? You have other doctors to take care of. You got to pay them people, right? You have hygienists. You got to pay them. You've got to buy more equipment, have more chairs, have a larger space, whatever it might be, whatever the ceiling of complexity may be, to use Matt's term again, it's that you're going to continually be looking at adding more expenses. And even though you may be making more money, you may view it, or for those who are going in that direction, as being, man, well, I seem to be not making as much money, or my profit's not as good. Well, there's the mindset thing, right? But the reality is that, and Matt can probably share a story later in this podcast about a particular dentist who's actually seeing this. The reality is that, yes, you may not be seeing that same profit percentage, at least from your mind, what's left over, but you're making, for lack of a better term, much less of the contribution of making that productivity, but still seeing a great income coming in. So the mindset's going to shift, right? You, rather than being the driver of productivity, are now the one managing the productivity. So rather than you being 100% of the reason why you had that number, now you're looking at like, hey, it's great. I got the same number, maybe a little bit more, but I only put 30% of the effort into getting that. Does that make sense, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely. So really, it's maybe another way to say it is it's shifting your expectation.
Correct.
And shifting that expectation from, let me back up. I'll say it like this. I've really identified there's three categories of dentists that I see out there that really most all dentists can be lumped into one of the three categories. The first category is just this category one dentist that is just trying to stabilize their practice and have a predictable cash flow and a predictable patient flow, right? And that's a scary place. You've been there. I've been there in business. It's a really scary place. And so the whole goal for that category one dentist is to move into a category two dentist, which has a really predictable patient flow, has a stable cash flow, right? Has a schedule that, they look at and it's booked out for, a few months in advance. And so that decreases their anxiety. They know if they can get to work, they're going to, make this money as long as they can do the work, right? But what ends up happening is that becomes a trap.
Yep.
Because once you get into that position, it's very comfortable and profit margins are really high, right? So if you're doing, $1 million, $1.5 million in revenue, you might be taking home $400,000-$600,000 without even really trying, right? I don't mean by not working. What I mean by not trying is not paying attention to the numbers and the profitability and all that stuff. It's just, it just happens, right? So that becomes the norm, right? In thinking that you should be getting that, 40% profit margin, 50% profit margin, right?
Right.
And so what I'm hearing you say is that once you decide to grow and to re-engineer the practice in such a way where you are not the main driving producer and moving towards this place of getting out of the chair, or what I like to say now, that you're moving towards a place of where doing dentistry becomes optional, then you have to shift your expectations because there's not going to be as much money left over.
Right.
And Lynn, let's back up for a second too, and let's just, growth is expensive, right? So I see this happen all the time with doctors. Their expenses go up when they decide to shift to a model where they want to get out of the chair and they're adding capacity and all of those things. And that really plays with their mind because their expenses have never been that high before.
Right.
Talk about how you have viewed that as you've looked at making those expenses versus investments.
It's funny. Yeah, you just use that special term right there, investments. I'm going to go right there. So you've already given the clue to our listeners out there. So the reality is that what most dentists do is they look at that scenario as like they're raising the expenses as being just that, their expenses, and suddenly they have this impediment. But it's so interesting. That same person probably has no problem putting money down on an investment that may have a future value of a growth and a future value that would allow that person to reap the rewards of that initial investment. So to Matt's point, typically someone who's going to be growing and actually kind of doing these things, you're investing in extra expenses, whether it be new doctors, whether it be new hygienists, whether it be larger facilities, whether it be whatever types of more equipment to allow you to do dentistry more efficiently. That becomes something that you're looking at as being a temporary expense, meaning that you're going to have, yes, at some point you're going to be less profitable. You're not going to be making the same kind of margins because you're investing in that particular growth. But the reality is that as the practice matures and you grow in that capacity, you're then able to recoup the value of your investment. Oh, and here's the important thing, not off your back or your sweat, or for lack of a better term, your ability to actively produce that dentistry. That becomes the scenario where you're putting on, you are working on the practice rather than in the practice hat.
Right. Yep. And now we've moved into what I call the category three dentist, which is the dentist who has created a position where they find some freedom. And now, like you said, they are recouping that early expense in their mind or that early investment. They're getting a return on investment now, but it's not on their back, which, really should be calculated in to say it's a much higher return on investment than just a monetary return on investment, right? It's a life return on investment.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the one thing you find you have a challenge talking to some dentists in terms of who have a hard time or struggling with the concept of kind of getting that, because what they're telling me or telling you, I'm sure as well, they want that freedom. They want out of the chair. They want the ability to not feel as if the pressure is on them daily. But suddenly, when they realize you're going to get that, but there is some things you need to take into consideration. You're going to have to invest in that particular practice or that particular model for you to occur, or for that profit to occur for you. But the most important thing we want to tell dentists is that you are essentially at that particular time then building an asset. And I'm sure we can talk more about that. But the asset value becomes so much more because you're basically now you have a business rather than a job to actually look at potentially selling or having an exit strategy for.
That's right. You know, it's I was just thinking about an image, and I'll try to describe this well to our listeners here. But if you could think of a line graph that has three lines on it, and the top line is net production, or we could call that revenue in the practice, right? And the model that we're talking about, if we were to graph out the growth, then that line should be moving upwards, right? It should be curving up, right? So the top line revenue should be curving up. Then what happens, the second line is going to be profit, right? Or owner's compensation, we could call it that, profit, right? And in the early part of this journey, that line is probably going to stay flat, right?
Right.
Because when you were at 1.5 million bringing home half a million or $600,000 a year, as your net production goes up, but you're not having to do the work, your profit and your owner's compensation is going to stay the same. And the third line is though your hours in the chair. And it should be curving down. So we've got the three lines again. I'll describe them again. Top line revenue curving up, compensation, profit staying flat for the early years, and then your time in the chair moving down, right?
That needs to be a track KPI. That's a wonderful way of looking at it. But to show doctors actively, let's look at the amount of hours you spent in the chair and what it meant to your income. No, oh, I'm sorry, you weren't making, you know, the commensurate income that you saw when you were in the chair by yourself. But my gosh, look, you're making probably about the same, but you are now practicing literally one day a week in the office. Boy, is that somewhat of what you wanted, doctor? I mean, that's kind of their epiphany that I think that needs to happen here. So I think that's a wonderful imagery and a KPI that probably should be tracked to show them, to give them the reality check that they probably need to have at that point.
Yeah, because the expectation I think that we find when we have conversations with them, the expectation is that as that top line curves up, the overall, you know, net production, that their profit and their income should curve up right along with it.
Right.
And that's true if they're the ones doing all the work.
Correct.
But when they, you know, their hours in the chair curve down, then, you know, that income's going to stay flat for a little while, right, in the early years. Right. But then there is a crossover point, right, where that net production becomes so large that it's now that profit or owner's compensation no longer is flat, but it starts moving up incrementally along with the production if you're paying attention to it.
Yeah. Right. It's intentional. Yeah. Like profit needs to be intentional.
Yeah. So talk about that for a minute. Let's get practical for a second about how you make sure that your profit is intentional in your practice.
Well, one of the things that I do, and this is something that any guy who runs a larger company or even smaller sophisticated businesses think, is you have to put profit first. I mean, it's got to be, as far as what I do in my particular practice, is I build into the expenses of the practice a management fee. I have value. I mean, I may not be the one doing crown preps and pulling teeth and you know, doing veneers anymore, but I am the one who is running the organization. I am the one mentoring doctors. I am the one spending time and effort paying the bills, making sure things are taken care of, running meetings.
And you've created the environment for everyone else to, you know, have an income from this business.
Yeah. So it's the way I look at it. And this is a mindset thing, right? I think sometimes doctors think in terms of, well, I'll just take what's left over. Well, why take leftovers? I mean, you're the one who kind of, you're a valuable expense to that practice. Without you running the organization, it's not going to be kind of being in the position it's currently in. So what I do in a practical measure is I basically carve out 7.5% in a management fee that gets paid to a company separate from the practice that acts as a management company for the practice. So I've carved out my accountant. This is something that all you listeners out there, you probably need to talk to your accountant about that. If they don't understand it, you probably need a different accountant because you really need more sophisticated financial people helping you run your business. So what I do is we have a separate company that's a management company that gets paid a fee, which I in turn own, that carves out the expense that I bring to the team in terms of what I bring as an owner, or for lack of a better term, the CEO of the company. The second thing I do is I also structure, again, this is going to get into the weeds a little bit, but I think we need to hear this, Matt, is I structure my company as both an LLC and an S-Corp. And so at the end of the year, I also cut myself a salary check at the end of the year in December that mm-hmm. comes out to make sure after all the expenses that come out from the management fee, and then at the end of the year, my accountant then knows how much to cut me a check to make sure that I'm seeing a 12 to 15% return on my practice every year. So that I know every year I'm getting 12 or 15%. Yeah. So that's how I design it, so that I'm not in a position now where I'm waiting for leftovers. I know what I'm going to get. And then and the great thing after I get that expense of 12 to 15, then what I have below, that's the EBITDA we talked about before. That's what I'm looking at, the real growth, that the extra. Now I take that money and I can use that money to raise salaries. I can use that money to give us bonuses. I can use that money to create interest from future investors or potential partners for myself. That's where the real magic happens.
Yeah. Well, I love what you're saying, because you're saying, hey, carve out that profit first. And it's the same structure as if you went and, you know, joined or hired, you know, an outside management firm or a DSO structure, right? I mean, they're going to get paid their percentage.
Same way.
Right? Yep. And so it's the same exact thing. You've just done it internally. I say internally, inside the Dr. Sted Lewis, you know, umbrella of companies, right? You've got this management company just like, you know, another management company would be out there, because you're bringing that in and you need to get paid. So you're carving that money out and you're spending it. You're sending that money over there first. You're intentional. You're saying, hey, we're going to get that 12 to 15% number no matter what. And then all other expenses and investments get made out of what's left over, out of the operating account. So now you are being intentional about the profit, and you know exactly what you have to spend based on what's left over. Now, the other interesting thing as well is that you can make a decision, right? If you choose to, you can make a decision out of that 15% that you've carved out and put over. You could say, hey, I normally might take, you know, 5% of that or 2% of that or something like that and put it into outside investments, you know, real estate or, you know, something like that.
Right.
Or you could say, gosh, but I'm getting such a great return in my practice. What if I took that 2% and put it back into the practice to, you know, grow even more, add some new chairs, you know, things like that. So you can make those kinds of decisions, but you make them from a very organized and not chaotic position, right? Because it's like, oh, I'm carving out this money sitting over here first, right? So I just want to say it over and over again. I love how you said you're very intentional with that profit, right? And how that works, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's the thing. I think what I find dentists saying, you know, we're growing and I've got all these, you know, wonderful top line numbers, but I'm not making as much. So I'm like, well, you just need to reframe it. You need to be more intentional where your profit's going. And then on top of what you just shared with me, they need to have like a better mindset of exactly how the money is being made in the first place.
Yep, that's exactly right. Yeah. And, you know, the thing that we don't get every year is you don't get a statement on, most of the time, on the value, the new value of the practice, right? So much like with most investments, you get a statement at the end of the year that tells you, hey, you know, your, you know, mutual fund account or your real estate or whatever went up by, you know, X amount, right? And that this is the new balance, or it went down, right? We don't see that on the dental practice, but it very much is an asset. And when you have an environment where you've got that top line revenue curving up on the graph, your income stays the same and your time in the chair decreases and that line curves down, that automatically increases the value of that practice.
Easily.
So your asset value, if you were to get a balance, a statement at the end of the year, you have created quite a bit of value in the practice, you know, by doing it that way, right?
Right, exactly. And we talked a little bit about that last time, but I'd be happy to repeat it. This is how, when the person who's the buyer or the investors now, as we talked about last time, the new buyers out there aren't these young associate doctors coming out of dental school anymore. These new buyers out there are much more sophisticated business evaluators who are private equity money or they're venture capitalists, and they're looking for businesses, not for high income generating dentists, because their intention is not to keep you around. Their intention is to take a business that they can grow and take a long income that will have the potential to grow even more. And so that's the wonderful thing that allows those dentists who are doing this to have an asset value that is far larger than anyone who basically is in a solo operation where their operations profit is based on their efforts in the chair.
Yep, exactly right. Yeah, that's one of the main drivers of practice value. Get that doctor out of the chair without it affecting top line production, and also even more so without it impacting the doctor's bring home, right?
Yeah.
The doctor's profit.
You know, another practical tip I can share with doctors, Matt just shared the idea that most people don't know the asset value of their business. I do. You know, one of the things I do regularly is I work with my financial team. I'm fortunate enough to work with a CFO team that allows me to kind of look at my reports monthly to see where my EBITDA is, see where my true asset value is, so that if I choose to at some point to take on, whether it be, you know, an investor or a partner, if I decide at some point that I want to sell, which I definitely don't, there's an effort, or for lack of a better, a clarity of knowing exactly what my company is worth. And so my goal someday, even to get more granular and sophisticated, is now I'm saying monthly, but I've been talking to my CFO, I want to see it weekly. How are we doing weekly? Where are we at? Where am I currently going? Where are the trends going? So I know I'm constantly watching those things to make sure that I'm able to, again, we talked about KPIs in the past. That's a KPI for me to understand as the owner, how's my asset value trending on a week-to-week basis?
Yeah, that's a great point. I certainly didn't mean to infer that you can't know that value on a regular basis. I think most category two dentists, right, that are kind of stuck in the chair and they're trapped in the chair, they're not thinking about that asset value, right? But when you move into that category three, I think that's a responsibility that you have, a requirement that you have, is to be tracking, which I'm so grateful you said that. It is trackable. That asset value is trackable. Understanding what your EBITDA is and knowing what is being, what the marketplace is offering in terms of multiples of those EBITDA, it's very trackable. Most people just don't track it, right? Most doctors just don't even think about it.
Yep. And just to kind of add a little bit more layers of advantages of doing it that way, if any of you out there are considering maybe going ahead and getting loans or working with banks or lenders out there, that becomes, I hate to say this, it's a new measurement out there. You know, we're all realizing the economy has definitely changed the rules and regulations of how these banks are lending money. If you're able to hold numbers and show banks your asset or your enterprise value, you become a valuable asset and partner they want. They come looking. I got to point out, not to brag, but I'm at the point now where banks are coming at me and asking me if I want to be taking money from them because they're eager to deploy it because they know they're going to get the return from me.
That's right.
So those are the
kind
of game changers that can happen for those who kind of go in this direction. You know, no longer this cottage, you know, industry level kind of business anymore. You become an industry that banks start to look at as being, hey, this is where I want to deploy our money so that we can get some more money on the back end because we know that this guy's going to continue to grow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One of the eight key drivers of practice value is financial performance and having professional financials so that you know those numbers. And they're at your fingertips. So that's fantastic. I want to finish here. I think it's been a good episode. I want to finish with this story that I was telling you before we started recording here. I was talking to a doctor this week, and we were just talking about this same issue, right? And we were talking about how his top line growth has been, you know, really, really, really good. I mean, he's kind of tripled the top line growth over the past 3 or 4 years, but his take home and his income has stayed the same. And so we were talking about, he was concerned about that. And at first, when I was talking to him, in all honesty, I was concerned about it as well. I was like, well, what's actually happening here? Let's make sure. And so he said some of his numbers. And one of the things that I noticed was exactly what we've talked about all throughout this podcast. What I noticed was his percentage of the production, he's only producing about 30% of that top line revenue with his hands. The rest is being produced by the practice and produced by associates. So the framework that it hit me as I was looking at his numbers and thinking about it is that, wow, you're getting paid the same amount of money over the past few years, but only doing one third of the work.
Yeah.
Or one third of the production.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. That's a fantastic position. His asset value has shot through the roof because of that, because he's flipped and re-engineered this business.
Right.
And then he also told me this. He said, you know, I do realize that if, you know, my arm got chopped off tomorrow, all I would have to do is just bring in another associate. And we most likely would end up growing by another 20% this next year because I'm not the main key driver of the production anymore.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, like, I know this, Dennis, and I obviously respect his anonymity, but he's an amazing guy, and he's got a wonderful practice. I'm so proud of them. So good for you, my man. I know you're listening. Good for you. Congratulations. The thing I also want to mention, Matt, and this is all the things you said are completely true, and I'm excited, and I'm glad that this is being said because that's the big rub a lot of these guys think. But the other great benefit that a lot of times these guys forget who are growing this larger enterprise and are looking at the potential of like, well, how can I get, you know, a better return? let's also remember the tax advantages you're getting by owning that larger company, right?
Yeah.
There's great tax advantages going as the owner. There's also, and this is true, when you're going out to dinner and taking out your associates, when you're taking your team out and having celebration dinners, when you're going out on a trip or a CE course, you're running the expense through your, I sure hope you are, by the way, running it through your company. And therefore, you're actually looking at it from a perspective, you are actually doing better because the expenses of your lifestyle, you know, related to the practice, obviously, are being covered by the practice. Yeah. So look at it that perspective. But that's the other hidden value that is going on that becomes a huge, huge bonus in regards to how you're actually going about making money, or more importantly, running the organization. So I'm always trying to let people know they get caught in that belief of like, well, the only real value is the money that's coming in for the production of the dentistry. Well, you have to start looking at it like how business people look at things.
Yeah.
What's the value that that company brings to me on the things I'm able to do because of the freedom I now have because I'm out of the chair? And so that's the thing I'm hoping people get with this as well.
That's right. And the tax code is, I had a friend tell me years ago when I got a financial business, he said, you know, the tax code is just a behavior incentivization plan. And so all it's doing is it's incentivizing certain behaviors and disincentivizing other behaviors. And so the tax code is incentivizing you to grow this practice. This doctor we were talking about, he told me he's now got 35, I think, staff people. And he's like, what a privilege it is to lead, you know, these 35 people. And he is a economic force in his community now. He is generating income for 35 people in his community, and the tax code incentivizes him to do that. Now, one quick little caveat here. I'm not pretending to be the tax expert, so please check with your tax professional. But also, you know, when you create that management company is now another entity that has its own set of expenses, right? So you're now only taxed on, you know, what you don't spend on those expenses, even in that company, right? So now you've created a new company with a new set of expenses that can be written off. And, you know, probably, you know, depending on how your accountant feels about this, your home can now become a, you know, headquarters for the management company. Your dental practice is the headquarters of the dental practice. And so there's lots of benefits to doing, you know, all of those things, you know, there together. So you're right.
Welcome to my home office.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So now you've got this return on investment that continues to go up and up because more money is staying in your pocket. And you're doing exactly what the tax code wants you to do, which is, again, creating jobs, creating economic benefit for the community.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah, great. Well, I think it's been a great episode. There is always that tension between growth and profit, and it's something that I think we need to talk about more and needs to be talked about more inside the industry. So thanks for taking the time to do it today, Seth. Great episode. Hey, if I don't see you or talk to you, I'm sure I will, though. Happy holidays. Hope you have a great Christmas. And to all our listeners out there, depending on when you're listening to this podcast, we hope that you have had a great holiday here.
Yeah, absolutely. Merry Christmas to you and your family, Matt.
Hey, thanks, Ed. Hey, just a quick blurb to all our listeners. Remember to please go to our website, Dental Sherpas Pod. That's dentalsherpaspod.com. And you can interact with us there, leave us messages, and we'll be announcing things coming up. Also wanted to just plug, you know, one of the things that we have done over the years in looking at this tension between growth and profit is create some tools to use. Just a little growth model, which is just a simple Excel spreadsheet. I sent it over to you the other day, said, you know, that just kind of says, okay, we can plug in how we want to grow, if we want to add, what we think that's going to cost, and then how long is it going to take us to see that return on investment. And so if you're interested in something like that, reach out to us, dentalsherpaspod.com, and we'll go from there. Dr. Stead's book, we're working on that, hopefully to get that out to you. We've been talking about that for a little while, but hopefully get that out to you and be looking for some other exciting things coming up in the near future.
Yep, excited about 2021. It's going to be a great one for all of us.
That's great. You probably, if you're listening, get this, you know, first quarter of 2021. But we hope that you've had a great holidays and that 2021 is off to a great start. And as always, thanks for listening. Until next time, Seth, take care, buddy.
Until next time. Aloha, everyone.